Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Request for Explanation podcast. Today, we've got me, Carol Nichols.
Me, Manish.
Special guest, Taylor Kramer, Kramer TJA.
And me, Alexi.
And today, we're going to be discussing RFC 2071, Add Infiltrate Type Alias and Variable Declarations. Taylor, could you please give us a little introduction of yourself and an introduction to your RFC?
Yeah, so as everybody, I said, I'm Taylor, Kramer TJ on GitHub and IRC, and Kramer T on Reddit. And I have been using Rust for, let's see, since the beginning of 2016, so not super long. And I have recently been involved on the Lang team as a Lang team shepherd, so I've been working to try and get some of the RFCs sort of cleaned up and put in a shape where we can merge them and get some of these core issues and initiatives that we've had this year pushed through. So one of those big initiatives is Infiltrate and making Infiltrate usable in more places. And that's sort of the core focus of my RFC.
Okay, so that makes me want to stop and say, can you summarize what Infiltrate is, please?
Yeah, so Infiltrate is a way to talk about types that you don't necessarily know what the concrete type is, but you know an interface that it implements. So think about in Java, if you have a function or a method which returns an interface, so you say like return list of integer rather than array list of integer, you're returning an interface, sort of a promise to your consumer, rather than returning some concrete specific type. So the way that we do that in Rust is we say that you return an infiltrate, a type which isn't revealed to the user of your library, but which is guaranteed to implement some given trait. This is really, really useful, especially when working with types that aren't traditionally nameable, like closure types or those really, really long combinator types that you get out of iterator libraries or the futures libraries, which can be a real pain to work with and are really, really hard to write down or impossible to write down if they contain a closure. So with Infiltrate, you can just return them as a future of, an impl future or an impl iterator or an impl fn. So.
And where can we use this today?
So today, there's a version of the feature called Conservative Infiltrate, which is available only on Nightly and allows you to return infiltrate types from inherent lets you return them from normal functions. So just freestanding functions, you can write infiltrate, and that'll allow you to pass around these types which are anonymized. What we want to be able to expand it to and what this RFC tries to do is it tries to let you return infiltrate types from trait methods and inherent method impls, and just sort of more generally give names to types that are returned as infiltrate. One of the big issues right now is that you can't do things like place bounds on infiltrate types, and you can't name them, and you can't work with like an associated type of an infiltrate type. Because you can't specifically name the type that is being infiltrated.
Yeah, so a really good example is, so say I wanted to implement an iterator and the items it yields are closures. Currently there's, you have the problem of you need to write type item equals something. Mm-hmm. And for closures you can't name those. So the idea is, we have a simple trait thing for doing this. Let's make it so you can write type item equals impl fun. And then in your next impl, you can use that same type alias, and the compiler knows, you have a type alias. So now I know that all of these different instances of impl trait are actually the same type. Because without that, if you had two functions that returned impl trait, the compiler's like, those are completely separate functions. They can return different closures or different iterators. So I can't say those are the same type. But with type aliases, you can actually properly say, I'm not going to tell you what this type is, but it's the same in these two places.
Right, exactly. You're able to say, hey, I'm not revealing the concrete type of that infiltrate type, but I'm able to refer to the same type in multiple places under an alias. Yeah.
So what are the implications of such a feature?
So this feature is really, really significant if you're familiar with trying to use closures or iterator combinators or futures from traits like such as Tokyo's service trait or just some other trait or function that you're trying to implement. A lot of times it's hard to pass these types around and work with them, and this RFC would make it easier or even possible to return these types from trait methods and to work with them inside of generic contexts.
I guess this will also improve documentation and error messages for complex types.
Yeah, so that's another big advantage of Impl-Trate is that when you're working with an Impl-Trate type, since you don't know its concrete type, all of the error messages show up in relation to the Impl-Trated type. So rather than seeing no method foo on and then of map of filter of and then this huge closure type, now you just see no method foo on impl iterator or no method foo on whatever type alias that you've defined.
I think one case where that becomes really important is like when you're doing a lot of things with iterators. So then you have some map of filter of drain or something. And now you have this complicated type, and you actually don't know what it's an iterator of. Is it an iterator of an integer, a reference to an integer, a reference to a reference to a reference to an integer? Then, like, let's say you want to zip it with another iterator, then you have to, like, spend time staring at the documentation or just add stars and ampersands and conversion functions and from and into until you get there. And this takes a while, and this is just annoying, and if you could get it to show Impl-Trate in various places, which I guess if you start using this in your code would happen, you get a better idea that, oh, all this is doing is returning an iterator over a reference or whatever.
Right. This is actually one of my first things that I ran into when working with Rust is I saw, oh, hey, I have all these cool iterator combinators and things that I can write, so I can take, my vector that I took in from a file and then map it and filter it and do all this other stuff. And then I went, hey, this is becoming sort of big. And then I went to move it into a function and I got stuck because it's impossible to return those types because you can't name closures. So then I found all this advice online about I have to stick it in a box and then that's like causes an allocation and might be bad for performance at runtime and all this other stuff. And I went, hey, that doesn't sound good. Why don't I just stick it back in my function? So I wound up with just a bunch of messy code. So I think this is one thing that now we have a really easy answer to that question, which is just you can return an impl iterator, which is just some type that implements the iterator interface.
Yeah, I'm super excited about that. Are there any downsides to this, to what you're proposing? Like, it seems like this is going to affect inference or maybe monomorphization or the code size or compile times or any of those things. Should we be concerned about those things?
Sorry, that was a lot of things to tackle.
Yeah,
I'll try and go.
I don't even know if this affects any of these. These are just things that.
Oh, no, it definitely does. So you brought up some good points, which are that a lot of things previously when you're working with trait objects, which is what you have when you have like a box of iterator or, a reference to iterator that's not an explicit type. When you're working with those types, you only monomorphize a function once, right? Unless, because it's just a vtable lookup for the methods rather than having to generate separate copies of each function. So one thing that'll happen is if you're using Impl-Trate very verbosely, and in a lot of places over your code, it does have the potential to increase code generation for those spots where you could have used trait objects if you're instantiating it with multiple different types. The sort of counterpoint to that is that it also allows you to reduce code size because it allows more things to be inlined potentially because you're introspect all those different functions and say, hey, this is, I see that this method is really only being used once for this type, so I'm just going to combine those functions and into one location. Another thing that's interesting that's a potential downside is that in order to, and a thing that's gotten brought up a bunch on the RFC is that in order to determine the concrete type of these type aliases, you have to do a limited form of module or trait or function local inference, which doesn't currently exist in Rust. So what this means is that when you declare, you know, type foo equals impl trait, which is the syntax for creating a new type alias to an impl trait type, the concrete type of foo has to be inferred from somewhere else in your code. So currently in Rust, you only have inference that's local to function bodies. If you declare things that are outside of function bodies, such as const or statics, they don't have inference in any way. So what we have to do in order to actually be able to determine the concrete type of your impl trait type aliases is we have to look at all of the functions and the different items that appear in the module and then determine from those the type of the impl trait type.
Alexei, was this the part of the RFC that was making your brain scream?
Yeah, so it's really interesting. So the RFC has this really wacky example where you say type foo equals a tuple of impl display, impl display. So two impl displays, and then you have three functions. The first function does not know what either of those types are. The second function knows what the first one is and is like the one who defines what it is. And then the third function knows what the second one is and defines what that one is.
Mm-hmm.
So
and in a former version of the RFC, there were even more complicated situations that you could have where one function, for example, created a vec, but it didn't know what the type of vec it was. It didn't know what the like vec of t, it didn't know what t was, but another function could return like a vec of i32, and those would unify at type checking so that it knew, okay, in that function it needs to create a vec of i32. This is actually how normal Rust works, right? If you were to write, you know, let mute x equal vec new, and then say, you know, x dot push of 5, it would infer your vec to be of a vec of i32. But in Rust, the way it works right now is that the way that my RFC proposes is currently for a type of unidirectional inference where each function has to fully determine the A type and impl trait type or place no constraints on it at all. So you can't say that, like, this is a vec, but I don't know anything else about it. Or this is a thing that implements iterator, but I don't know anything else about it. You have to either say that a given impl trait type is, you know, i32 or vec of i32, or you have to say nothing about it at all.
Yeah, so this ends up making the inference problem a lot more constrained and reasonable. Correct me if I'm wrong, mm-hmm. The thing that decides what type an impl trait is has to be in the same module as the alias, right?
Correct. So the current RFC says that whatever when you declare an impl trait type alias, something that appears in the same scope has to determine the type of that impl trait type. So usually that's a module, which is what you brought up. So that's it. If at root level in your module you said, you know, type foo equals impl trait, then you have to have a function or something, you know, a const or static or something else in that body that the compiler can use to determine the concrete type of foo. However, if you're inside of a trait implementation and you specify one of your associated types as type foo equals impl trait, then it has to be determined within the trait implementation. So any of the actual trait functions or consts are able to determine the concrete type of foo.
So why why restrict it to modules? Why not have global inference?
So this is actually something that comes up a lot, and there are some languages which take a more global approach to inference than Rust does. But in general, I think it's really, really valuable when reading and writing code to be able to keep reasoning local. And you basically want to think about how you can minimize the amount of code that you have to keep in your head at any one time, and having, you know, a change in one file in one part of your code base, a small change there completely, you know, change how inference works in some other part of your code base, possibly without even producing a compile error. It might just cause it to do something different. That's generally bad. We don't like that. So when we're trying to avoid those sorts of things, it's really helpful to expose clear boundaries at the module level or the function level or the trait impl level. Those are all places where it's really easy to see, hey, here's the contract that I'm exposing to the outside world, and take that as an opportunity to concretely reason about your code.
Yeah, so probably the most notable example where global inference happens, at least that I know of, is Haskell, where by default, if you just don't put any decoration on your functions, they're totally inferred. And I think functions that call you can determine what the types of the things inside of you are, is like how global the inference is. And because this ends up being not the most pleasant, I believe the Haskell community has a general best practices of you always put a type annotation on your functions, or at least your public functions. Just to keep this reasonable.
Right. That's exactly right. So those sorts of really hard to reason about interactions between all the different types that exist in your code base are what we're trying to avoid. So keeping inference at a module local level or a impl local level makes it a lot easier to reason about. There's also something to be noted, which is that people have different sort of definitions of inference. But one, the definition that I'm using and the version that's used inside of the RFC and specified inside the RFC is directional. So as I mentioned, it's one way. So I can write I'll write my function body, which determines the type of my infiltrate type alias. But I can't have code or other effects, other things in the body of my function determined by the type of my infiltrate type alias. It's unidirectional. So I can't have a function body which, you know, does something different at type checking time because of what some other function has declared.
Do you perceive that causing limitations in the system, or do you think that most of what should be expressible will still be expressible, even if it's not fully circular, global, whatever you call it?
Yeah, so as far as I'm concerned, I think that allows you to express 99.95% of what you'd want to write. However, it does make some things less ergonomic. So one of those things is the sort of vec case that I was talking about. Now, you know, if you have a function that just wants to return vec new, and it knows, and you know in your head that your type alias is a vec of I-32, and the compiler could maybe determine that from looking at some other piece of code, it doesn't matter. You still have to write, you know, vec of I-32 new. And that's a constraint that causes and that you have to live with. So there definitely are places where it could be more ergonomic to do a higher level of inference, and that's something that we're definitely interested in exploring in the future. But usually it won't limit the expressiveness of your code. The one counterexample of this, obviously, is when working with types that are impossible to name, such as closures or iterator combinators. Those types, you'll only be able to work with as their concrete type inside of the body in which they've been defined. Because you can't say, in another function, you're not able to make a concrete statement about the type of that infiltrate type, so that you can use it in a more specific way.
Will this let me implement traits on closures?
Will this let you implement traits on closures?
Yes.
No, you will not be able to implement, well, I mean, in the sense that you already can implement traits on closures, then yes.
Wait, how can you already implement traits on closures?
You can write a blanket impl for everything that impls fn or one of the fn traits, right? So, because...
Such a bad idea, wow.
I mean, like, there are things that you can do, but no, that's not something that this RFC is aimed at.
Because the next logical step is then you can serialize closures. And that would be awesome.
That would be awesome.
What does that mean?
I don't...
Complete execution vulnerability for everyone.
I mean, lists
can
do it.
Aren't closures just structs? So what do you mean serialize?
Well, right now you can't implement a trait on a closure because you can't name the closure to implement a trait on it.
Right. So if you mean implementing a trait for a specific closure, I think I misunderstood what you were saying earlier. I was thinking you were saying, like, for all closures. If your goal is to implement a trait for a specific closure or for a specific set of iterator combinators or something like that, no, that's not something you can do because it would essentially... be like trying to implement something on someone else's type. But furthermore, there's the RFC specifically blocks the use of infiltrate type alias types from appearing in impl declarations. So I can't say like type foo equals infiltrate and then impl foo because that has sort of weird interactions with, you know, what exactly does that mean? It's not super clear, you know, how to evaluate that. One thing that we are looking at that for, which could potentially be an expansion in the future, is as a way to encode conditional traits. So a lot of the things, if you're working with iterator combinators or futures, you'll often see things like they'll return types that impl clone if the argument you pass to the function impled clone. Or they'll impl, you know, static if the type that, or impl send if the type that you passed impled send. So that's not something that you can do right now with impl trait because we don't have a mechanism for specifying these kinds of conditional traits. So that's something we're looking at expanding this proposal to do in the future.
Yeah, that's a really interesting case. It's why a lot of people are like, oh, so when all the stuff is stable, the standard library will start using it. And as someone who worked on a standard library, no, we'll basically never be able to use this stuff because we do all these conditional impls, like for an example, the result of calling map on an iterator is double-ended if the source iterator is double-ended. It's exact size if the source is exact size. And so using impl trait would strip you of all of these like genuinely useful and important features.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that's actually the reason for one of the other proposals which the RFC adds, which is const static and let bindings. So that would allow you to say in a let binding that I have a type which implements iterator or some other interface and then use it as that type so that I can get those nicer error messages without having to have the standard library make all those code changes.
So how has this RFC changed over its lifetime so far?
Yeah, so there are a few things that we already touched on a little bit, which is the inference model. So the inference has gotten more conservative over time as the RFC has progressed in the hopes that, you know, we will be able to expand it one day if we discover that what we've gone with is too conservative. All of these changes are backwards compatible. The other big change was changing a little bit more minutia, specifically consts and statics. I had specified let consts and statics, actually. I had specified their concrete types to be revealed within a module, since you can always determine the concrete type of let consts and statics from their declaration, or in the case of lets, from the surrounding function body. But that... what that does is that means that infiltrate there has sort of a different meaning than it does in function signatures, where returning infiltrate will only ever give you an infiltrate type, while declaring a const or static as infiltrate could give you some concrete type if you're in the same module. So that got kind of hairy, and it's not clear that there was really good motivation for that difference. So I removed that, and so now const and statics and lets always hide their concrete type even within the same module.
Although you have, I believe you have a sort of, you can kind of like pseudo assert the type, right?
So
go on.
Yeah, so if you have an infiltrate type declaration where you've said, you know, type foo equals infiltrate, rather than just saying infiltrate directly, in those cases, you're able to create an obligation that on the concrete type and say, hey, I want to say that this, I'm within the same module, and I know that this variable that's of type foo equal infiltrate is actually an I-32. In those cases, you're able to do this sort of compile time downcasting where you claim that it's an I-32 and you can use that variable as an I-32 within the module, and that's checked at type checking time to make sure that you're actually using it in the proper way.
Right, so the way that looks is, as an example, let x colon I-32 equals something that is only known to be a foo.
Right, exactly. And that allows a lot of what we were discussing before in terms of allowing different bits of code within your module to all work with this type that's shared but private to your module.
So how common do you expect this feature to be? And what normal users need to know about this?
I expect to become really familiar with this because I think it's going to be a really nice way to work with a lot of these combinator types that are going to become more and more popular as we see the explosion of async libraries and things like generators and async await, and people get more used to writing sort of more functional code in Rust using like lots of closures and things like that. So I think it's going to be really prevalent in those areas, and that you'll see it a lot there. You'll also see it probably recommended in more beginner circles in areas like using infiltrate declarations in order to get nicer error messages and those sorts of use cases. So I think that it's going to become really common, possibly as common as interfaces in Java and other similar languages. I don't know how true that will turn out to be, but I'm interested to find out.
So what's left before this RFC can go forward? Is there anything in the way of this that's preventing it from being implemented or anything like that?
So in terms of what's blocking the RFC from being brought to FCP and merged, well, there's still some ongoing conversation about exactly how the inference system should work. And that's something that we're making a lot of good progress on. And I think the conversation around all that has been really productive. I'm pleased with that. So I think we'll be able to get all that sorted out reasonably soon and taken care of. In terms of implementation, the implementation of the type aliases is actually pretty straightforward. It's actually been implemented in the past, a couple of years ago by Eddie B. Bringing it back, it's just a matter of, you know, sort of bringing it back and reworking it to deal with the updated compiler structure, and then also adding the bit for module level privacy. So the actual implementation concerns are not super strong. Like, it shouldn't take forever. This isn't blocked on, you know, bringing in all of the trait system revamp work or anything like that.
And I understand this RFC hasn't gotten very many comments, and you were hoping for the level of comments that, say, your extern crate RFC has gotten. So what kind of feedback are you looking for from people who might
Did you just cast a curse?
Yes. Yes. May your RFC have many comments.
So this is one RFC that I was hoping for a lot of comments on, and I am pleased and really thankful to all the people who've gone and read through it and given really valuable feedback. So far, I feel like it hasn't gotten enough attention from the community in terms of the specifics of how it works and getting experience with people's different use cases. There's a lot of things around some of the minor like syntax quibbles, like in previous RFCs there have been debates around whether or not how exactly lifetime should be elided and things like that. There's a lot of sort of small like what things that we need to know in order to determine what kind of defaults this feature should have. So people reading the RFC just giving us an idea of here's how I would use this feature, here's the sorts of places I'd expect it to appear, this is the sort of code that it makes really easy to write, and maybe here's some other code that I want to write that wouldn't be convenient to write with this RFC. So that sort of feedback is always really valuable to hear.
I'm sort of surprised by the lack of doomsday comments about global inference on this RFC.
Yeah, in terms of doomsday comments, so there definitely are things where, like, you can declare an infiltrate type alias at top level in your crate, and then it's just determined by, potentially any function in your crate. I think the big mitigating factor for that that's made it a lot more palatable to people is that it is, as I said before, a unidirectional inference. So any type that's determining the type of foo has to already claim inside the body that it knows that the concrete type of foo. So it's not something where one function could specify the type of foo and then another function could use the type of foo in a different way. They both have to sort of anonymously agree on what type foo should have.
Wait, are you saying we should implement the compiler in the blockchain?
Yes, I think that's exactly what I suggested.
I quit. So Aaron Turin was very excited that we were doing this RFC. Do you know why he's so excited about this RFC?
Aaron loves Infiltrate. He's worked really hard on Infiltrate. It's kind of his baby. I think actually the first Infiltrate RFC might have been his first RFC.
No, he's done.
Somebody could correct me on that. Maybe that's not true. Did I make that up?
No, he's done pre-1.0 RFCs.
No, but I think one of them was related to this, but I could be wrong. Feel free to correct me. We can go back and edit the show if I turn out.
I know one of the earliest RFCs was him and I working on collections reform, which started the nightmare trend of reform RFCs.
Okay, maybe I'm mistaken. I'll have to go back and check. But he's had several RFCs on Infiltrate that have gotten a lot of really good comments and a lot of really good feedback. And he's worked really, really hard to respond to those constructively and positively and get Infiltrate to a place where everybody agrees on it and is ready to move forward. Or rather, like, not everybody agrees on it, but at least there's some consensus about how to move forward. There have been a number of really contentious things along the way about whether to use Infiltrate in argument position or whether to have the same syntax in argument position and return position, or how, as I mentioned before, how lifetime should be elided and exactly what behaviors that should have. There have been a lot of issues that have been resolved over years, literally, as to how Infiltrate should work. And I think both of us are really, really excited to see this move forward and become something that is ready for people to use in Rust.
Taylor, you're totally right. RFC 105 opened on June 3rd, 2014, by Aaron, add unboxed abstract return types.
Jeez,
and,
okay,
like,
you win.
His first comment is, for what it's worth, I feel somewhat uneasy about the Infiltrate syntax proposed here. Bike shedding, welcome.
Oh, and was there ever bike shedding?
I am legitimately, like, surprised that we've gotten this far with Infiltrate. Like, it was always like, oh, yeah, this is just straw man. Oh, yeah, this is just straw man. And it's like, oh, no, this is it.
Yeah, I think I joined the conversation a lot after you did, but I've always had sort of a similar feeling of that this was just kind of a stand-in. However, I think that it does really, it has a lot of things that are really positive about it, is that it really clearly conveys what's happening. So you know, like, hey, I have something that Impl's iterator. It says Impl iterator. I think that's pretty straightforward. It's also pretty easy to Google for.
My only objection to it is it's like very ambiguous with, oh, implement a trait. Like the actual
block. Yeah, like actually writing a trait implementation. Yeah.
I think the only alternate syntax that has really like ever gained traction for this is that you start using bear trait for this and then change box traits to be like din traits for trait objects.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's the Rust 2.0 magic.
So there's potential ideas there around epochs and whether or not we want to do some sort of bare trait versus dyne trait for trait objects. There was also a syntax that got really popular that I was actually a fan of for a while, which is, I think, Without Boats proposed, which is sum and any. So you would return sum iterator rather than Impl iterator. And the reason that this was nice is because it made a distinction between existentials, which are the thing that, where you say, I return some type implementing iterator, and universals, which is where you say, I will accept any type implementing iterator. So in argument position, you would say, you know, X is any iterator, and I return some iterator, which is kind of has a nice pedagogical feeling to it. In practice, it turned out that most people agreed that the sort of default behavior of having argument position be variant while return position is this invariant type was the easiest for most people to comprehend and the easiest to explain. You also don't lose any expressivity by changing the syntax to just Impl and Impl, because you can always write out generics manually to express the universals case, the any case.
I still think we should go back to Rust roots and use tilde.
I never used Rust when it was a sigil language.
It was literally what brought me to the language. And then it was gone like the moment I started trying to use it.
Awesome.
You would try to create a dynamically allocated string, like capital string, and instead you'd get a dynamically allocated pointer to a statically allocated string, and the types would be awesome, and you'd have like sigils all over your screen and were just awesome, and of course nobody got anything done. But it didn't matter anyway, because the compiler would ICE every 5 minutes, so like, you never got to that stage where you're worrying about getting things done.
Yeah, man, we used to not have vec, it was tilde slice. It was magic.
All right, now that we're getting into nostalgia for pre-Rhino days, it seems like we're ready to wrap up. Does anyone have any closing questions? Okay, well, Taylor, thank you for being on the show. And listeners, if you would like to request an RFC for us to talk about, please go file an issue, and you can get to our repo by going to is.gd/rfepodcast, all one word. Thanks.